It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For centuries, indigenous tribes along the shores of Lake Superior used fire to help manage the lands and forests. The Ojibwe people call it ishkode, or good fire. This powerful ancient practice was passed down through generations of Anishinaabe people.
Now, after years of research and advocacy, the practice of a cultural prescribed burn is returning to Wisconsin Point. That's a freshwater sandbar and wildlife preserve in Superior.
Evan Larson is chair of UW-Platteville's Department of Environmental Sciences and Society. In collaboration with local tribes, he studied fire ecology in the region for more than two decades, and he recently published new research about indigenous fire management and co-authored a children's book called Ishkode, A Story of Fire. Evan, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much. It's really great to be here.
Okay, there was a test burn that had been scheduled for September at Wisconsin Point, this freshwater sandbar in Superior. Can you tell us what's the latest on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a wonderful example of how when you're working with fire, you're really working you're working with fire and you don't get to dictate. So weather conditions, it's been so wet this fall that it's been a long time to get just the right conditions. As of now, it looks like possibly yet this week, so maybe that first week transition into October or really soon thereafter, fuel conditions are ready. The partnerships are all getting formalized and the last signatures are coming together. And so hopefully any day now we'll see smoke coming up from Wisconsin Point.
Wow. In Wisconsin Point, this is the long natural sandbar in Superior that divides Alloway Bay from Lake Superior. Can you describe the red pines and the vegetation there?
Oh, it's just beautiful. There's trails all throughout the end of the point and some great parking areas. It's a very accessible space. And when you get out onto those paths and you have that really soft feel of pine needles under your feet and the smell, especially when the sun's out, the pines that are towering over the road, you're almost driving through a cathedral there. Those are 200 plus years old. And a lot of them kind of carry the story of fire in their trunks and fire scars. And that was part of the really kind of beautiful entry into this story for a lot of us.
How do these trees tell stories through their rings? Their rings go back centuries.
Yeah. And so a lot of people, you know, if you see a stump, it's almost this tangible, you reach out and you want to touch it and you can see those rings and you can count them back and see, you know, what year were you born or some of those big events in our lives. And to know that every year the trees out on Wisconsin Point have been laying on another ring and that that ring is very much a story of the conditions that they lived in that year. Was it a wet year? Was it dry? Was there a windstorm? And in the case of some years, was there a fire? And when that fire passes by, if enough heat works through the bark of these trees, and they're really resistant to fire, but if enough heat moves through that bark, it can cause a scar. And then what the tree will start to do is heal around that scar. But the actual sign of the injury is then filled with resin. And that's a response by the tree to just protect itself. And then as almost permanently laid down, some of the fire scars that we were looking at in old stumps from trees that have been dead for decades, the scars were formed in the 1700s in some cases. So they're hundreds of years old. And yet still, you polish them up and you look at them under a microscope and you can see the individual cells still. And that story of fire has been carried in the bodies of those trees for all these years.
And these are cultural prescribed burns in the context of Ojibwe culture and the word ishkode. Can you explain how these good fires are part of your research and a part of your work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that it's just so important to recognize that when we're working with these trees, you know, they're rooted to place. And so the stories in their rings are emergent from that place specifically. And so the history of the Anishinaabe, all through the Great Lakes, there's a lot of movement and there's a lot of hardship and there's a lot of really dramatic impacts from government policies and acts of removal. And so for communities whose knowledge and understanding was shared through stories for all this time, it's a really kind of powerful experience to recognize that in the case of the trees on Wisconsin Point, the stories of fires that they're carrying in their rings are literally the stories of the people, and that through all of the trauma and all the years of real hardship, that those trees have been rooted to that place and are carrying that story. And that the work that some incredible students and my amazing collaborators and I were able to do is help bring those stories back out to people today.
And can you make that connection, how fires that burned across Wisconsin Point in, you know, in the 1700s and the early 1800s, how those fires inform a prescribed burn today?
One of the amazing things that you can learn from trees is not just when a fire occurred, but you can actually see the season of when that fire occurred. And so a lot of the fire scars that were recorded out on Wisconsin Point are recorded in the later part of the growth ring of that year. And so that's telling us that they're kind of late summer or early fall burns. And there are so many stories about how important these areas were for blueberry gathering and all sorts of other really important medicines and culturally significant plants. And there are a lot of stories about going and picking blueberries and then setting a fire to that little pocket of blueberries as the people left, because blueberries, much like the red pine, really thrive in the presence of fire. It rejuvenates them. They'll grow more berries. It helps them kind of maintain a robust presence in that place. And so linking the tree ring data with the traditional stories of the timing of burns really made that connection really strong. And then the other piece that was really interesting in our research, you know, because how do you know there were people setting fires and there weren't fires caused by lightning? And that's a really important question for a lot of people. And so, you know, there are stories, and certainly those stories tell us that the people were setting fire. But if you need more than that, you know, we looked at the Fire Atlas data that's been maintained by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. It goes back decades, and over about 500,000 acres surrounding kind of northern Wisconsin and Wisconsin Point, there were just a few fires that were caused by lightning recorded. And so if you compare the frequency of fires caused by lightning today compared to the frequency of fires that was recorded in the tree ring record, it cannot explain the patterns that we see in the record and on the land. And so in that context, you know, that's enough. But then even further is that once treaties were signed that further dislocated the Ojibwe from Wisconsin Point, the fire stopped. And so we know that lightning did not sign those treaties. And so again, that's a really, really powerful line of evidence that those were fires that were set by people who were living in relationship with that landscape.
And going back to Wisconsin Point and how fires really call the shots in some respects with these prescribed, cultural prescribed burns, Evan, you have just recently returned from going to Burn Boss Academy, this intensive course where you get certified to plan and execute these burns. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what happened there and what you learned?
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. So the Wisconsin Prescribed Fire Council, who some of you might be aware of, have been working for years to organize a certification program to help make sure that the people in Wisconsin who are looking for ways to engage with their landscape through fire can do so really safely and effectively. And I mean, there were hundreds and hundreds of years of experience among the instructors for this incredibly intensive workshop-based approach to the training, where we were going 14 hours a day, all fire, all the time. Amazing group work, amazing instructors, so reflective and so much knowledge, but really getting together to make sure that there is a community of people who are really proactively engaging with fire in the landscape. And the reason that's so important is, you know, there is the Forest Service. We have the DNR, and they're doing really good and important work with fire, and increasingly so. But the vast majority of land in Wisconsin is privately owned. And so when you look at how much land we need to burn per year to sustain this incredibly rich and beautiful biodiversity of our state, it's never going to be a thing that government agencies can solve. It has to come to people, the people who are living on the land. And so certainly private landowners in Wisconsin stand to benefit from this knowledge because their lands will benefit. Certainly there's reason to work really hard to make sure that we're supporting efforts for the indigenous communities of Wisconsin to really be able to practice their traditional land tending practices in a way that honors both the history of the place, as well as their culture and their relationship with fire. And so they're all parts of the bigger solution. And that's a way to, you know, live on this landscape and support the parts of it that I think so many of us just love and really want to celebrate.
We're talking about the science and history of prescribed burns as the practice returns to northern Wisconsin in Wisconsin Point. Evan Larson is professor and chair of UW-Platteville's Department of Environmental Sciences and Society and stays with us. Evan, you co-wrote this new children's book about prescribed burns. It's called Ishkode, A Story of Fire. What was it like to translate your research and your livelihood for an audience of young readers?
Oh, it was just magical. The story emerged through years of collaboration. And so, so many people have contributed to the work that is now expressed in that book. Connecting with Miri Villiard, just an incredible artist who's a Fond du Lac band direct descendant. Collaborating really closely with Nisogabekwe Melanie Montano, an enrolled member of the Red Cliff Band of Ojibwe. You know, and what we really felt inspired to do is make sure that this lesson helps get to the folks who need to hear it. You know, we can publish scientific papers, and those are really useful and important, but so much of the work around fire is really about our culture. And, you know, growing up, as many of us have, we, you know, hear Smokey Bear, we've seen the movie Bambi, and we build this like fear and knowledge of fire, this terrible and destructive thing. And there's no space for it to be good and beautiful and quiet and peaceful. And that starts from a very early age. And so when we wrote this book, there was just this picture we had of a caregiver, a grandma or a parent or somebody who loves a child and sitting with that child in their lap and turning the pages and reading the story out loud, because then it's not just written, but it's spoken to. And to have somebody come into life and their first understanding of, you know, fire is something to be respected. It's something to be careful around and with, but it doesn't have to have that same kind of dangerous and damaging and almost evil perspective that a lot of times we characterize fire with. And so, yeah, it's helping to build that culture from the very start.
For me, one of the most striking moments in the book is when white settlers clear-cut the forest, taking away these trees that are absolutely precious to the indigenous communities in Wisconsin Point. And, you know, I'm just wondering what can happen when people who aren't in tune with Wisconsin forests and these trees, they take control of the rhythms of the trees and take control of their destiny.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I usually cry when I'm reading that part of the story. Just kidding. Anyway, I think Miri's illustrations are just so beautiful. And you know, and she's showing there's not evil intent, but there's just a misunderstanding or a lack of understanding. And I think that, you know, a lot of people who are listening, maybe they've read the book Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Kimmerer. And, you know, that idea that she so beautifully illustrates with sweetgrass that, you know, if you abuse or overuse this plant, this relative, then, you know, it'll go away. But it'll go away if you ignore it too, and the importance of that balanced relationship. And what became just so clear through all of this work is that, you know, that relationship, that reciprocity, it is just as relevant between people and pines as it is between people and sweetgrass. And so I think that that's kind of at the heart of this message, is that, you know, we have impacts and relationships and responsibilities across the landscape, and that sometimes we don't even really recognize them just because of the way the history has played out. But it's never too late to learn about that and to start picking up those responsibilities again. And you just have to be open to learning.
I had no idea the connection to blueberries for Wisconsin Point and the importance of Minun in Anishinaabe. And can you tell us the story of blueberries?
Well, I can share some stories that have been shared with us.
Yeah.
And just knowing, you know, that there's so many stories and it's so important. But one of the elders at Fond du Lac that we worked with early in this, you know, we were talking about Minnesota Point and Wisconsin Point, because the story is relevant for both landforms. And he shared this kind of memory of a story of the whole point just lined with canoes. And, you know, the youngest kids are splashing and playing in the waters of Lake Superior, and the rest of the family is just on the point harvesting. And another elder shared a story about, you know, this memory of like sitting down and just as far as the eye could see, just blueberries. And I think that the abundance of that landscape is so far in the past that we have a really hard time conceptualizing what it looked like. And that shift, it's this shifting ecological baseline syndrome might be a way you could describe it, where we're so used to seeing the land as it is, it's really hard to imagine what it was. And so this burn on Wisconsin Point, you know, it represents so many things. It represents sovereignty. It represents responsibility and reciprocity, engagement, but it also represents a really active effort to create the vision and the world that could be. And I think that in a way that's, you know, kind of the most important and powerful piece of all of this, is that we're changing the way we think about how we can relate to the land. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the really key piece here is that it's helping people recognize that we can have a really positive and constructive impact on the landscape, and that the things that people do, they don't always have to be negative. And I think that that's really important, to have that emotional space to recognize that we're actually a really valuable and important contributor. The best way to protect something is not always to just leave it be.
Where is the research headed next, and how are local tribes staying involved?
It's so much fun to see this work, because it's like there was this energy built up, this pent up energy, and you just see efforts emerging across the region. There's conversations happening at Red Cliff, at Bad River, at Fond du Lac, at Grand Portage, Leech Lake and Red Lake and White Earth, the Menominee Reservation, all of these places. You can see a resurgence of fire as a key cultural part of how people live and interact with the land. You know, it was a little spark in a lot of dry tinder. And to be very clear, you know, this is not the first project that is doing this, and certainly we are not the first to advocate for this. But it's just been really powerful to see the response. It has absolutely made community happen, and that's a really beautiful thing.
Evan, thank you for sharing this research. Thank you for sharing the children's book.
Thanks so much for having me.
That is Evan Larson, chair of UW-Platteville's Department of Environmental Sciences and Society. We learned about his research and collaborations around the practice of cultural prescribed burns and his new children's book, Ishkode, A Story of Fire. It's co-authored with Melanie Montano. Cultural prescribed burns are being reintroduced to Wisconsin Point, due in part to Evan and Melanie's research and advocacy.